All right, so I'm David Gerzhoff-Richard. I teach social media marketing at Emerson College, where in my library they do yell at me all the time to be quiet. So this is about me. It's a platform I tell all my students to get on for self-promotion, but I already have that introduction. So I was told that, or you guys were told that I am a social media guru. Well, I am not a social media guru. I don't think anyone is a social media guru. Social media moves so quickly. There's so many new platforms. The internet moves at beyond light speed. And so when people say, Dave's a social media guru or this person's a social media guru, I point to Nanja. So Nanja is an orangutan. And Nanja right now has about 76,000 fans on Facebook. So I point to Nanja. She's not even human. And she's the social media guru. I'll get back to Nanja in a minute. But a little bit about you. So I've been speaking with Carolyn over the past, two, 3 weeks on what it is that you as librarians are looking for. And so as a marketer, I look at marketing challenges. I look at communication challenges. And so I wanted to get an understanding of what it is that you guys are looking to do with social media and with the various platforms that are out there. So there's things like reaching new customers, finding people that might not have ever set foot in a library that are in your community, but if they knew that certain assets or resources or people were available to them, that they would come in. Getting customers to exchange, to engage with your library in the community. So already existing people that are, maybe have come into your library but haven't come in a long time, or that are following you on your Facebook page or your Twitter because they like the library, but they haven't really engaged in any way. Connect with non-library users. We talked about letting the public know that libraries provide services and materials beyond just books. That seems to be a really important one. Increasing awareness and use of library assets ties back into just beyond more than just books. And increase and maintain funding and revenue streams. Prevent disruptions of service. We've seen a lot. And this is, from my perspective as a marketer, not as someone that's from the library world, it seems that there's been a lot of disruption of libraries, a discussion of closing libraries. Are libraries still relevant in the digital age? These are, these are news stories that you see on CNN and MSNBC, and I'm sure they make you guys cringe, right? Because of course you're relevant, but the question then is, why is the media asking that? Right? So. How have libraries been using social media so far? You guys have actually been really great for the most part. I've spent some time looking through, not just in Massachusetts, but across the nation at some various social media marketing campaigns that various libraries have engaged in. So you may or may not be familiar with some of these. There's Geek the Library. Just a show of hands, how many of you guys are familiar with this? I love it. All right. I'm sure you've all seen the New York Public Library video where the Ghostbusters come in by the improv group, yes? Yep. So it's great, except the challenge there is that Ghostbusters was only shot in one library. So you can't do a great, don't close the book on the library campaign by having Ghostbusters come into every library. So there's other things that I'm seeing librarians and libraries do. Text a librarian. Are you guys familiar with this one? Yeah. Here's a local one from the Woburn Public Library. They're doing some. Is there anyone here from the Woburn Library? They were doing a. This is just a great little just an engagement piece on Facebook. Enter at your own risk. They were doing some storytelling. Getting ready for Halloween. And then just some just really basic use of Twitter. From an educational standpoint, sharing some of the assets that are on hand within libraries, so some photo database items being shared. These are things that on a rudimentary level, excuse me a second, I'm just going to close this door. Perfect, thank you. Some rudimentary work that's happening from just an update. And this is really great, I'd say, surface level, basic social media practices. So how can your library use social media to connect with the community? That's really the question here. You know, there's, you know, your basic platforms, and I'm sure you're all on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. So what I want to do today is talk about how you can think outside the screen. Everybody said, you know, think outside the box, think outside the screen. All right. So does anyone, it's kind of hard to see what this is, but does anyone recognize this? It's a cave painting. It's called Cabos de los Manos, Spanish for a cave of the hands. And this is can be found in Patagonia, in Argentina. It dates back to about 14,000 years. And this is really interesting. So anthropologists love to look at, you know, old relics of humanity from different societies from years past. And so they started studying Cabos de los Manos. And they found some really interesting things. First off, how it all came about. So how all these handprints ended up on the wall was the humans at the time would break a reed, they would chew on some dye, they would put the dye in their mouth, they'd put their hand on the wall, and they'd blow the reed, and the negative imprint of the hand would stay on the wall. And so as the anthropologists went through and started looking at this, they found all kinds of interesting things. First off is the ratio of left-handedness to right-handedness identically matches human society today. It doesn't matter if it's U.S., Europe, Asia, Africa. Louder. All right. So I'll stay a little bit closer to the microphone over here. So it doesn't matter where it is in the world. This, you know, 14,000-year-old cave painting identically mirrors that of us today in terms of our left-handed and right-handedness. They also found that, you know, some people are missing fingers. There's children. You would think that folks missing fingers might have, you know, healed up and cared for. So this is it's the whole society that's involved in this. And so I like to start off talking about Cabos de los Manos because these are human beings that are genetically identical to us today. There's relatively no difference between them and us, except for the fact that they didn't have the internet. They didn't have iPhones. They didn't have Apple. You know, what they had was some dye, some reed, and a cave wall. And so what they put together was their social network for the time. So this is that. Everyone from their group, from their society, you would think, I can't say this for sure, but a lot of the people from their group and society participated. Children, elderly, and they all put their handprints on this wall. And, you know, what I point to this is that, you know, we have Facebook today, and everybody says, oh, well, what's new on Facebook? You know, it's this newfangled technology. Well, 10,000 years ago, there was no Facebook, but there was Handbook, and that's what this is. So what does that tell us as marketers and as people that are looking to use social media? So social media has been around for 14,000 years, probably even, you know, later than that. We just haven't discovered whatever that earlier form of it was. But social media taps into, you know, it certainly is helped by mobile and internet and all this, but it taps into something that's fundamentally human. And that is the desire to be part of something bigger than oneself, to be able to share in that community, right? So if that wasn't this basic human trait, we wouldn't all be coming here together as a group of librarians trying to talk about best methods, right? So it's in our DNA to want to connect and to want to share and to want to communicate. So at the basic level of social media, it doesn't matter if it's Facebook or Twitter, because I'll tell you, yeah, Facebook is great, and sure, they're going to be around for a while because they have this great glue, but it's not that the glue that Facebook has is not anything technological. What it is, it's this network that connects us with our friends and our family. And when you think about, like, would I ever give up Facebook? It's not, oh, I would lose my stream or I would lose my ability to, like, tell people what I'm doing. No. It's I would lose the connections that I've created with the 100 to 500 average number of people that someone has on Facebook, and I'd have to rebuild that someplace else. And I wouldn't want to lose that connection, and I wouldn't want to rebuild it. So at the fundamental level, it's this human connectivity and this desire to share. So it really is about community. And what I want you to keep in mind is, you know, when we're going through this presentation, and even, you know, when you go back to your libraries, think about that it doesn't matter if it's Facebook, if it's Twitter. As long as there's community there, and you can share and you can, like, tap into that basic human desire to connect, then you're already a step ahead of everybody else. All right. So you guys have probably heard this a zillion times. I'll just keep this at a very high level. Traditional media, which we've pretty much been stuck with for, you know, up until about 15 years ago, newspapers, TV, radio, magazines, that what I would say is traditional media. It's one way. And they typically market by interruption and by intermission. What I mean by that is, in between the story that they're telling, whether it's a news story or an entertainment story, you get a bunch of ads. Or, you know, it's, you know, you're driving along and all of a sudden, you know, a song ends and you're interrupted with four or five ads and then you get your next song. Social media is two-way. And what I mean by that is that it's not just you broadcasting and your constituency receiving. It's a discussion that goes back and forth. And so when you build community, and it does take a little time to build community, but when you do build community based on trust and communication, all of a sudden your marketing is a hell of a lot stronger because it's not, you're not interrupting someone and you're not catching them when they're not paying attention at an intermission. They're actually focused very much on what it is that you're discussing, and it's marketing by permission. Hey, you've elected to fan my Facebook page. You've elected to follow us. You've elected to subscribe to our YouTube videos. So for that reason, I'm willing to listen a little bit closer, give you a little bit more attention. All right, so two-way communications requires you to listen. Now, this is a big part of social media that a lot of people, a lot of practitioners that are on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, whatever, they seem to miss. Like, they tend to think about the platform as a broadcast. You know, like, okay, so we have some news, let's put it out a press release, let's put it on Facebook, let's, you know, let's YouTube it and get it out. Yeah, you know, it's great to, you know, share your news that way, but you're missing a big part of the community by not listening to what people are looking for, what they need. You'd be surprised. You probably wouldn't be surprised. The internet is a tremendous resource for answering questions. Who, what, where, when, why, how to do something, how to build something, who, you know, scored the most runs in 1969, you know, whatever. You know, people turn to the internet to ask these questions. And traditionally these questions would sometimes end up in a library, you know, either being asked to a librarian to help find that resource or just, you know, going into a library and pulling out an encyclopedia or some resource. So there's some really great resources. To start off with is Twitter. And maybe I'll talk very quickly about the two sort of guerrilla social media platforms, Twitter and Facebook. I guess YouTube I put in there too. But so when you think about from just the people that you're connected with, and this is not from your librarian or library fan page, this is from your personal page. The people that you're connected to on Facebook tend to have something in common with you, and that is temporal overlap, meaning you were in the same place at the same time as these people. So if you look at your Facebook friends, you'll find that probably about 95 to 98% of them were in the same place and in the same time as you at some point in time. Friends, family, you went to elementary school, high school, college, you've worked with them. And that's all great and good, but your commonality is time and place. It's not shared ideals or interests or anything to that point. In fact, you're probably connected with someone from high school who, you know, you just want to make sure that, you know, karma is still, like, treating them the way that karma should treat them. Twitter, on the other hand, most of the people, at least from my experience and the people that I talk with, don't really know. You know, it's probably just the opposite. I probably only know about, you know, 3 to 5% of the people that I'm following on Twitter that follow or who follow me. And the The reason that is because, mainly because of this ability to search on Twitter, search on twitter.com, that you know, Twitter is not about an overlap of time and place, but it's over ideas. You know, people are tweeting out ideas, they're tweeting out concepts. So you could think about Facebook as voyeurism and exhibitionism of your friends and your connections. Well, Twitter is also voyeurism and exhibitionism, but it's of ideas, notions, news stories, that sort of thing. So that's a good way to kind of separate out those two. So if you haven't tried it, search.twitter.com is a super powerful tool that is free. And what it is it's essentially a search mechanism that's built into Twitter that enables you to, in real time, see what anybody is saying about any keyword or any key phrase. So if you want to know about, a trending topic or a book or, what people are saying about, library closings, you can type it into search.twitter.com and you will get a real-time focus group of what people are saying. Twitter has more than reached the critical mass to give you, real-time results on just about any topic you want out there. So it's a really powerful tool that way. Facebook search. Certainly using the toolbar, the search button, to be able to find individuals and groups and fan pages that are discussing and dealing with the various issues that you're interested in. YouTube. Here's an amazing fact that most people don't know about YouTube. It's the second largest search engine in the world. It's amazing. Right after Google, YouTube is the largest search. And what people are searching for a lot of is how-to. How to build a bridge, how to do just about anything. And it's a really powerful resource for that. So when you think about library assets and the role of librarians, a lot of it is like, how do I find something? How do I do something? So that is a really great place to start off and see, think about the questions that are being asked to you in the libraries. And then type that in and listen to see what people are saying on YouTube, but also in the comments on YouTube. Google search now integrates Flickr, Twitter, and Quora. How many of you guys are familiar with Quora? Okay, just a couple. Quora, I think, could actually be a really powerful tool for libraries and librarians. So it's a social media platform that kind of lies above Twitter. And what it is you can ask a question, and then you can have that question propagate into Twitter. So people can ask a question like, what's the best social media platform for marketing a library? And that, you can ask that in Quora, and it also go onto Twitter. And there's amazing discussion, and people can rate, what the best answer is. It's kind of a mix of like a Wikipedia, but more question and answer that then ties into Twitter to find out, all kinds of resources and assets of people that can answer those questions. Yelp. A lot of people think of Yelp as just restaurants. Restaurants are actually not the biggest category on Yelp. It's the biggest category on Yelp are service providers. I'd like to think of libraries as service providers. You provide a tremendous service to the community. So, see what people are saying, if your library is on Yelp, and then if it is, read the comments. Some of them you might not like, but, listening and hearing what people have to say will help you adjust, but also give you great inspiration for new marketing ideas that you haven't even thought of. And there are some other platforms that you can pay for, like Radiant 6, Social Radar, Scout Labs. These are relatively expensive platforms for listening. I would say only start looking at those once you've fully exhausted listening on all the other platforms and you've done everything free that you possibly can and that you've mastered it. Then go and spend the money on something like Radiant 6. But it would be a waste of time and money if you haven't tried everything else first. All right. So blenders are boring, most of the time. This is an example of what I think is great social media experimenting. Are any of you familiar with Rule of Blend? Okay, a couple of you guys. Let's see if this will work. I might get some feedback here, so let's see what happens. Oh, you guys can't see this. All right. Well, you have a ladybug. It's almost as good. Okay. What's that? I don't know that this will play. I'm just going to move on. So, Wheel of Blend. Let's go back to Blenders Are Boring. So, there's a company called Blendtec. And, you know, I wouldn't know the name Blendtec if I had to. I'm not really a Blender customer. Maybe I like a margarita once in a while. But I know the name Blendtec because of what they did on YouTube. And what they did was a great experiment that they have been that they've implemented and they've been following through for the last probably about 5 years now. And what that is they take they tap into trends. Like, I don't know, an iPhone 5 comes out. And on the day the iPhone 5 comes out, they take that iPhone 5, and on their YouTube channel, they put it into a blender, and they answer the question, will it blend? They have, for every one of these videos, I think the iPhone 5 one has about a million views. The iPhone, original iPhone, has about 6 million views. And that's a blender, right? So going back to my orangutan, here's a blender. So what is it that works here? So I gave you two examples. And to begin with, I started talking about Nanja, the orangutan, and now we've got Blendtec. So Nanja is an orangutan at the Austrian Zoo. And what makes Nanja different than most other orangutans in other zoos is that she's been outfitted with a Samsung camera. And it's a very special Samsung camera. This one runs on raisins. And what they do is they put raisins in the Samsung camera, and she cranks it to get her raisin. And every time she cranks it, it takes a picture. And that picture then goes onto her Facebook fan page. And people love this. So this is a great example of the three E's: experiment, engage, and entertain. They're thinking, the Austrian Zoo is thinking outside of the screen, okay? They've realized that Facebook is the realm of photographs. That's what people like to share. So, yeah, they could take a picture of an animal, and look, it's really easy marketing a zoo. I can't tell you how many times I've turned on CNN and I've seen a story about a baby animal. Or, you know, some funny thing that an animal does in a zoo. People love animals, so they have it pretty easy to begin with. But they took it the extra step. They didn't just say, okay, we're going to take pictures of elephants and, you know, baby rhinos and what. We're going to put a camera in Nanja's hand, and we're going to make her the participant. So that's how the Austrian Zoo is thinking differently. Blendtec. You know, it takes a lot, and the CEO, you know, I'm sure, you know, in hindsight, it seems like this brilliant move for them to have a YouTube channel and taking whatever is sort of trending out there, putting it in a blender and seeing what it'll do. But that wasn't always the case. You know, at some point in time, some marketing person like myself, probably 10 years younger than me, had to go to this gray-haired CEO and say, I've got a great idea. Let's put an iPhone in a blender. And this gray-haired CEO had to say, okay, let's try it. Yeah, so because it's not a cheap thing to do. I mean, iPhone's a couple hundred dollars, and you know, it could be seen as a waste of time and resources and whatnot. But look at what it did. So the first part to social media is in using social media in connecting with your community is to experiment. So I've broken this down into really two different areas, new platforms and existing platforms. For new platforms, whenever you hear about any new platform, come out, sign up for it. Don't sit back and be like, well, you know, maybe it'll turn into something, maybe it won't. You know, I've made that mistake a bunch of times. I actually thought that way about Twitter when Twitter first came out. I was like, I don't get this Twitter thing. Why would anyone ever want to be on Twitter? Meanwhile, it's my absolute favorite platform now. So sign up for every platform, play with it, see how it works, try to take it apart, try to understand how community could use this to connect with, how you could take your content and your assets and bring them to bear on that platform. Investigate if you have an audience there. And it may not be that you have an audience right away, so it does take some time. But you really want to stretch it out and understand how you can tell your story. If there's one thing I know that I've always been inspired about by librarians, it's storytelling. I just, to this day, if I walked into a library and there was story time, it's like a black hole for me. It might just suck me in, even if it's like a story for 5 to 8 year olds. That's the idea on new platforms. It's just sign up for it, even if you're not going to use it, get it, because you probably may want to go back to it at some point. For existing platforms, and this is the important thing, I don't care if you're the most super savvy Facebooker out there or if you're just on Facebook for the first time. Set a goal for yourself to try to do something new every X number of days. Experiment. And the beautiful thing about social media is that it's not like traditional media in that you put stuff out into the world of communications, whether it's broadcast or whatnot, and maybe you get some feedback. Maybe someone says, "Hey, I saw you on TV." Maybe someone doesn't. I didn't even know that half the time when stuff's on TV. But with social media, I'm always getting this great feedback. So try putting up different kinds of content. Try running contests and promotions. Try something new every day. Push yourself, or not every day, but set a goal for yourself, maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks. Try to push yourself to experiment, and then use your insights, use Facebook insights to be able to measure what the impact it is that you're having. So that's the measured feedback approach. And from a marketing perspective, it's really simple, and it's really simple when it comes to social media. So a measured feedback approach to marketing is, if you can imagine, I have up here a circle that's split into four different quadrants. So you start off with the planning section. So you plan. Say, okay, I'm going to try doing, asking questions on Quora. All right? And so these are my questions I'm going to ask. I think that based on what I'm seeing on Twitter, because the core questions are going to go into the stream and hit Twitter, the best times to be on Twitter and to send out tweets are maybe between 3 and 5 on weekdays, or maybe 12 and 2 on weekdays. So that's, I'm going to set up my questions and I'm going to implement it. So that's when my questions go out. Then I'm going to measure it. I'm going to see how many answers I got back on different questions. And it may be that certain questions get greater response than other questions. I don't know, but that's why I'm measuring it. Then I evaluate it. I see what works, what didn't work. And then I replan. And you just keep doing this. And you have this sort of infinite loop of testing out and trying new things. And the beautiful thing about social media is it doesn't cost you anything more than your time, right? So you don't have to buy ads. You don't have to do anything like that. It's really just the human capital. So if you're willing to commit to try to experiment with different ideas and have some fun with it, you'll all of a sudden start to see, especially in measure and evaluate, you'll start to see what works. And before you know it, you'll have this community that's you know, that's following you, that likes what you're doing, and they'll say, hey, you know, keep up the good work. I really like that you're, you know, asking these questions. So this is a very important part to any social media campaign that that my firm runs or that I work on with my students at Emerson. So then the question is what to measure. Well, okay, there's probably about six really great things that you can measure. Now, it's based on any one campaign, anything, any one platform. There's nuances and you know, a variety of different things that you can measure, but generally here's, you know, six good things to look at for measurement. One is engagement, the level of engagement. And most platforms, certainly Facebook has Facebook Insights, most platforms have the ability to let you know what your engagement has been. There's you can measure influence, and there's two sites, Clout and Cred. It's Clout is K-L-O-U-T, and Cred is K-R-E-D. They both start with K's. So sign up for both of them and plug in all of your platforms. They're free, and it'll give you a couple things. It'll show you how you do on a day-to-day basis from an influence standpoint, but they both platforms actually show you, you know, what content you're sharing that's been really great, that's gotten the most amount of shares and the most amount of influence and of referral traffic and reach and all this. And so those are two really great platforms to use, and they're free. So I'd recommend signing up for them if you haven't already. Referral traffic is another thing that you can measure. Really simple. If you're putting content out there, not a bad idea to have a short link or something that brings people, like little breadcrumbs that bring people back to your website or your fan page or your Twitter page or a, you know, photo page. So you can measure that. You can measure clicks, and you can measure you know, through, if it's a website, you know, what your traffic's been that way. Reach is another one. Reach is really breaks down to the number of people that you're reaching through friends of your friends. So if you look at this little diagram here, and it's kind of hard to see, I know, because the projector isn't that bright, but it's this very hyperbolistic growth curve. So each friend or fan that you bring on has an average of about 100 people that are connected with them, that are fans of them. So your reach grows by each person that you bring on and that you bring into your fold, that you bring into your army, and we'll talk about that in a second. For each one of those people, you have the ability to reach 100 other people. Generally, it comes down to about that. Share a voice. Also, SOV is the acronym for share a voice. So just, you know, looking at any one particular trend or topic, what percentage of the discussion does your brand or your entity take up of that? And then sentiment is one. It's kind of a funny one, especially in Massachusetts. You know, Twitter has the ability to measure sentiment of tweets, but what I find more in Massachusetts than outside of Massachusetts is it gets a little bit off because when people are really excited about things in Massachusetts, especially in this area of Massachusetts, they love to use the word wicked. It's this wicked, great, awesome, whatever, and Twitter sentiment says, oh, that's bad. So things get thrown off a little bit. So the second one of these of my three E's, which are experiment, engage, and entertain, is engage. So again, I've had this broken down into two different categories, proactive and reactive. So what I have here on the left, and you can't read this, I can barely read it because the text is super small, but I'll tell you what it is, and you should definitely look it up. And I'm happy to have to share this with you. So the U.S. military is really organized, and they're really great when it comes to engagement. And so, you know, when you think about, especially the U.S. Air Force, so what they've done is they've applied some of their military practices to engagement. And this is on the reactive side. All right. So on the reactive side, you have someone that comes in. And you can see what this does is this just canalizes the different queries that come in to through social media. So if someone tweets at you, I don't know, there may be some trolls out there, and you're familiar with the term trolls, like the sort of internet web haters, that might be opposed to library positions on one thing or another. They might hate a book. They might hate certain facts that are true. I don't know. But those people do exist. And so if you're sharing information, especially facts that do exist, and people don't like those facts, they might start trying to interact with you in some way on social media and say, oh, you bozo, blah, 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 at bozo321. So what the U.S. Air Force came up with is this really great if-then scenarios. Is this a positive post, tweet, fan message, whatever? Yes, no. If it's yes, then engage, interact, have fun. If no, what kind of interaction is this? These are really great rules to have in place and to have something set up for your engagement strategy, because usually it's not just one person that's handling the social media for your library or your group of libraries. And so it's really important to be consistent, right? So to not, because you might have some person that's a little bit more sensitive to others that might actually, be baited into getting into some argument with, a fact denier or something. And that may or may not be, a strategy. Certainly engaging people in this is a strategy. Controversy does sell. But it's good to have a consistent plan. So, the plan ahead on being reactive is to actually have a really great content calendar. On the proactive side, is to have a rules of engagement. On the proactive side, have a content calendar, right? And what I mean by this is look at your, say, a month out. Okay, so we've got Thanksgiving, we've got Christmas, we've got New Year's. There's got to be some like really interesting things that happen with libraries around that time. I'm sure they get pretty quiet, but maybe that's something you can tap into. What is it that's happening around the holiday seasons? Okay, hey, this is really interesting. Maybe there's fun facts about Thanksgiving, or there's some sort of pilgrim memorabilia that your library has. I don't know, but think ahead and keep like a month out there, and understand based on your community how your community likes to connect. Every community is a little bit different online, so maybe your community is really great on Facebook in the evenings and then on weekends, or maybe it's just the opposite. You'll only get that understanding by looking at your insights and looking and doing that experimentation and understanding, and listening, understanding where and when people are. But when that comes when it comes down to it, is you can figure out, okay, on Facebook we like to have 3 updates a week. Any 4 is too much, 2 is too little, 3 is exactly where we want to be. So we know that based on the analytics that we've been running and we've been measuring. So let's figure out in advance what 3 things we want to share. There's your regular engagement of answering questions and whatnot, but there's the really cool stuff that you can plan in advance for and share that. Ask questions. I can't stress that enough. Asking questions gets people engaged and gets community engaged. Everybody has an opinion. You learn that especially in every 4 years around October, November. Everybody has an opinion. Solid rules of engagement. I put that on both reactive and proactive, because as you are being proactive, you're going to have people responding to you in terms of your tweets and your updates and stuff. So you want to also have, if I'm asking a question and I'm getting an inappropriate response, do I ignore it? Do I delete it? What happens there? My last point on here is the from foe to fan. So when you do have contrarians who are critical of you at a reasonable level, Okay, so you know, I'm sure there are folks out there that just, if for whatever reason, like they're just, you cannot reason with insanity. So you have to kind of rule those folks out. But there are people that may have a criticism about a library function or some way that the library runs. And if you engage that person and are polite and engage them and respect them, amazingly what happens is a lot of the time they're like, wait a second, someone's listening to me and they're taking me seriously, and they turn around and they can become your biggest fans. So my one caution in putting together a rules of engagement with is that not everything negative is bad. There could be some opportunity in it. So you just need to know what to look for. And what I'm doing here, by the way, is laying out an outline for you guys, depending upon the nature of your library's business, what it is that you're doing, so that you all can do this. And that's the level that I'm keeping this at. So only when you listen and engage can you build an army. And what I mean by that is we're talking about this reach. For every one person that you bring on board, you can reach out to 100 people. And you get people that eventually there's a critical mass that you will arrive at. It's not at day one. It's not at day 30. It's out there. And it's the kind of thing that only pays off long term. But what I have up here is a tweet session. And you can't read this, unfortunately, but what I'll do is I'll start this off. So I picked a local Massachusetts brand that I think really gets social media. It's a company called Beloco. And Beloco stands for Boston Local Company. And they make burritos. You probably have seen their logo or walked by one of their stores. So the tweet session starts off with Beloco tweeting, "Aw, really? Thank God it's Friday." They retweeted someone who said, "Chipotle, greater sign than Beloco." So Beloco's tweeting out that retweeting someone that said Chipotle is better than Beloco. That doesn't seem like good corporate marketing, right? And then this person who got tweeted said, "No, actually, Beloco, greater sign, greater sign, greater sign, greater sign, greater sign, Chipotle." And then someone else says, 100% untrue, Beloco, greater than all. Right? No one's getting on here and saying Chipotle is better than, after the retweet. So what's happened here is there's two, and then Beloco comes on and says, "Oh, thanks." Like, so what's happened here is Beloco's tapped into their army, and by retweeting the nonsense that someone that they perceive as nonsense, they've actually answered and addressed the situation by tapping into their army. They didn't have to say anything except retweet that someone thinks Chipotle is better than Beloco. But this only happens after time of listening and engaging and getting people that are not just following you because they look cool following a library, but are following and that are really engaged in your community to say, "Wait a second, you just took a whack at my library. No, no, no. You're wrong." All right. So, entertain. Content should be shareable, and some of you, I'm a child of the 80s, might recognize the Share Bear of the Care Bear crew. So, when you're thinking about your content, what it is that you're putting out there, and this isn't the sort of the back and forth banter in the chat. This is the okay, what is it that that we have that we can plan in our calendars that we know we've got some really great stuff that we can tap into. So these are some share tactics that just general ingredients that make content much more shareable. And what happens is when you have a mix of these, your community gets a lot more involved with the content that you're sharing. So compelling content. So things that hit an emotional chord or make someone really, angry or upset or whatnot. Humor. Humor is always good. Wit, poetry is, and it rhymes, things, puns. People really love that stuff, especially on Twitter. politeness, believe it or not, killing them with kindness is when it comes to, if you ask someone, there's a social media scientist, Dan Zarella, who runs experiments like I was telling you about that I'm encouraging you to do all the time. And he just did a basic experiment where he spent a bunch of time asking people to retweet, and then he spent a bunch of time asking people to please retweet. Well, guess what? When you ask people to please retweet, you get more retweets. It's one of those things you learn in kindergarten that a lot of people forget. Uniqueness, so not putting out there the same content that everybody else is. Your library is different than every other library that's out there. The New York Public Library, sure, they had Ghostbusters film there, but that's what made them unique, right? There's things about your library that makes you unique from other libraries, and if you can tap into that, that's the kind of content that people are interested in. Certainly, news, that's what's relevant, is something that that people will engage with. Controversy, on the flip side of politeness, things that are controversial tend to get people talking, right? So that's why we have all these reality shows, right? Because people are showing sort of like the bad underbelly of what it is to be human, and that is in itself controversial, and people talk about it and want to see more of it for some reason. And then stories. You guys, I'm sure every single person that comes in here and talks to you as librarians say, you're great storytellers, and you have this amazing repertoire of stories, not just in your personal possession, but in the possession of your library, fiction, nonfiction. There's a lot of, from a trend standpoint, there's a lot of Lincoln stuff going on right now. There's a Lincoln movie coming out that already was, Lincoln the Vampire Killer. So there's some debates going on right now. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Lincoln-Douglas debates, but they were very polite as opposed to, some of the debates that are going on these days. So there's things that you can tap into. I just found this photo, and I try to always sneak a Star Wars reference into every one of my things. But so this is a bunch of stormtroopers hanging outside the Orlando Public Library. So you guys are masters of content. Share it. Like, that's the best thing I could tell you in terms of there's oodles and oodles of books, and I know from my experience and from talking with my students, the hardest thing is to get them to open up the book and to read the first three lines. Once you get them past the first three lines, they're hooked, and they'll read the whole damn book. But it's just getting them to start that off. So, tapping into that and like laying those breadcrumbs of like, hey, here's this great story. You want to know how it ends? Read the book. Librarians help find answers. People use social media and the internet to find answers all the time. That's something that's just a natural fit for you guys to be able to tap into. But you need to be listening to know what the questions and to hear what those questions are to be able to answer them. So my last slide is ROI. And ROI tends to be, I know you guys had your business meeting earlier today, in terms of return on investment. When it comes to social media, ROI is still this big, fuzzy, up in the cloud kind of thing. It's really hard to say, okay, putting someone on staff to fully manage our social media all day, all night, it could be a salary of $30,000-$40,000. What do we get back for it? Well, you get an army that will come to your aid when someone's trying to close down your library 3 years from now. But does that, can you justify it today? No. Maybe. I don't know. But 3-4 years from now, you certainly can. So I encourage you to think of social media when it comes to budgeting, not as an ROI in terms of, what do we get back from this in terms of, real dollars, but in terms of, if we don't do this, what happens? So I want you to think of ROI as the risk of inaction in terms of engaging in social media. And just to reiterate, the cost of social media is really one person's time. It's having someone who may not be doing something, getting onto Facebook, getting onto Twitter, listening, engaging, and listening. it doesn't cost anything to be on Facebook or Twitter, not yet at least. I mean, Facebook's trying to change that a little bit. And, you know, certainly putting a budget together to help that person with their social media, like, you know, investing in Facebook ads that drive people to like your fan page, not very expensive, but really helps in building that army faster than doing it solely organically. So to recap, there's five things I'd like you to remember if you were to leave this room and say, okay, so there's this guy, he started off with a really bad joke, and then he said some really interesting things about social media. So one, social media is not new. Don't be intimidated by it. It's just a new means by which to connect with community. And that's the most important thing. Don't be afraid of it from a technology standpoint. Don't be afraid of it from a sharing standpoint. All it really is just the way that we are moving as a society in connecting with our communities and sharing and finding communities. And it certainly is, you know, community on steroids. When it comes to the content that you're putting together, think differently. Think outside of the screen, right? So you're not just saying, okay, let's take a cool photo of, you know, this, you know, historic document. It's, you know, tapping into what that historic document means and say, you know, would people do this today? Here's a photograph, right? So asking a question. So it's not just like, hey, here's a cool picture. It's like, would this Declaration of Independence be signed today? And, you know, would it include all the same, you know, stuff that it did back then? Listen, it's the most important thing. You can't know what content to share and who to engage with if you're not listening. The three E's of social media, and these are my three E's. You probably won't find this in a book anywhere, but it just makes sense, is experiment all the time. Engage with your community, tap into trends that your audience cares about, entertain, tell stories, share great content, and I'm sure you guys hear this all the time, but libraries are full of information. Leverage your content. Thank you. So I think at this time we're going to have questions and answers. So if anyone has a question, I'm happy to answer. I think there's a portable mic making its way around.
Hi. I have a very small library, I do a lot of social media. My problem is I want an app where I can put in the information and it will shoot it out to Facebook, shoot it out to WordPress, shoot it out to my press release. Mm-hmm. Know of any app like that?
No, there's definitely lots of stuff like that. There's something called Hootsuite, which is a really powerful platform.
Can you say that again?
Hoot. Like an owl, kind of like a bigger bird than a Twitter bird, Hoot. Hootsuite. And not sweet as in like the sweet like sugar, but sweet as in the sweet that you would put a bunch of owls in to hoot about stuff. So Hootsuite, there's another one. TweetDeck, yes, thank you. TweetDeck is a competitive product to Hootsuite. And so with these, what you can actually do is you can set up timed tweets and updates. So you don't even need to be around when it updates into your feed. My one caution with these is that if you rely on them, well, actually two cautions. One, don't rely on them too much because it ends up making you look and feel like a robot because you're just putting stuff out there and not listening or responding. And the other caution is don't put out the exact same content that you're putting on Twitter, onto Facebook, onto, you know, all the other platforms. Have it vary a little bit. Otherwise, there's really, you know, it becomes very repetitive and boring. I think they want the mic so that they can get it on video and capture it.
Hi. I've been reading about how Facebook is now not pushing your posts to all of your fans and threatening that you have to pay them or nobody will see it. What's the story with that?
Sure. Yeah. So I've actually been doing quite a bit of research on this. I've paid for some of my posts to see what happens, and it certainly does help. So what we're talking about here is Facebook. We're kind of tied into Facebook's economics. And so Facebook went public. They've got, you know, a billion users, and they're having a hard time figuring out how to make money with a billion users. So not a terrible problem to have, but one of the things that they've experimented with, it's something that I vehemently disagree with, is the idea of promoted posts. And this comes into something that's existed already for probably about a year and a half, which are shared stories. So if you are if you have a Facebook fan page, you can pay money to do a shared story, which will take, you know, one of the stories that you're putting on Facebook and have it populate as an ad or populate as a story on on your fans' pages, but also on your fans of fans. So it helps you get more fans, people liking your content. So what promoted posts is on the individual side. If, let's say, you're doing something really great and you want the whole world to know about it, promoted posts will, you pay $7 and it'll put your, as an individual post, in the stream and have everybody see it. They've pretty much, I'm not a big believer in taking something away and then making someone pay for it. I think that Facebook would have been much better off to create something new that seemed exciting and interesting that people would want to engage with and then pay money to do that. You're not getting as much, and you'll notice if on a personal level, you're still your sort of superpower users, the people that are power fans, the people that are following your fan page, which is usually somewhere between, or sorry, your personal page that's somewhere between 25 and 50 people. They'll still all see your posts, but that sort of greater sort of outside ring of folks. Facebook has some sort of calculation that it doesn't get shown to them. And so to answer your question on promoted posts, I see it as a little bit of an upper-class elitist social media in that those who have $7 to spend on every one of their posts can be more popular and get more likes and more friends, and those who don't. It takes a lot of the sharing and sort of the democracy of Facebook out of Facebook. But at the end of the day, the glue that holds Facebook together, which, like I said before, is this network of people that we've connected with that we don't want to give up, is not enough. What they're doing with those promoted posts is not enough to get people to say, you know what, that's it, I'm done with you, Facebook. How to use it from a marketing perspective? If you're, shared stories is really effective. That's been around for, like I said, for about a year and a half. So for your fan page, I would use experiment. Like I said, it's not that expensive to do Facebook ads. The one thing I would say about Facebook ads and shared stories is that you want to deliver people to your Facebook page and not to a website. It's people use Facebook today the way they used AOL 15 years ago. It's kind of like, they see the internet as Facebook, not as a platform on the internet. So they don't like to leave Facebook. So any Facebook ads that have been run that drive traffic to websites invariably fail or do much much worse at delivering traffic than Facebook ads or sponsor stories that keep people within Facebook and deliver them to a Facebook page. If you're using a personal page, if you're making an appeal, like you're trying to raise money for a library or for a cause, that's when you might want to say, oh, you know what, let's experiment with promoted posts and I'll pay the $7 for it. Ironically, one of the posts that I paid to promote was that I was going on to Fox News to talk about promoted posts. And I had a little bit of fun putting that one up. And it certainly did get a lot more traffic than some of my other posts. But yeah, so I think that there's a time and a place to use them. Facebook has now created this ability on the personal level to be able to, when there is something important, to be able to get your story out there. So I'm told that that's it for questions, and I have to wrap it up. But thank you guys very much.